You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
I hate change. I just want to be upfront with you about that because that's what we're going to be talking about this morning. And I hate it. Like, I think there's a couple things you should change, like your underwear, your clothes. That's probably important. I think that's about it, to be honest. I as far as like mandatory, obligatory changes. So I want you to know that as I'm talking this morning, I'm talking to you as one that doesn't like to do things differently. That the one doesn't, I don't like to change anything. I like to have a routine. I like to have a pattern. Now, there's something okay with that. It's not that I'm just like some ungodly, why don't you live by the Spirit kind of guy. But I think there's good things about having a pattern. But perhaps my patterns and systems are probably maybe a little bit too strict. And the crazy thing, you talk about opposites attracting and all that. I married the person that literally could redecorate our house every day if money and time were not a consideration. And money and time are a consideration, and it still happens like every other day. I want to go in and know where my couch is. I want to know where the chair is. I want to know where the TV is. And here's the crazy thing about change, too. And granted, like, if I come home and Kendra's rearranged the living room or our bedroom or something like that, that's okay. But the problem usually ends up happening is that when Kendra wants to change, then somebody has to do a project. And that somebody generally is not Kendra. So I like projects, too. But it's just a situation where Kendra likes to change. And change is not a bad thing. It's good to mix things up a little bit. You move things around and suddenly discover like 6 inches of dust that's been in that spot. Like, oh, wow, look at that. Or you find things. As a matter of fact, just this weekend we winterized our lawn, cut down all the shrubs and everything down to ground level and all that getting ready. And we discovered a football that had been missing for months. And we're like, look at this. We're like, where'd you get that? It was in the grass. Anyway, but I don't like change. I don't like to change things. I like to have a pattern. I like to have things segmented. And if you've been working with me, serving along with me at MC3 here in ministry or in any other role, you probably are aware of that. I'm just totally being real. We'll talk about real next week. But it's hard. It's hard when someone comes in and says, we're doing it this way. And my lack of change, and you could say there's somewhat of a control freak there, kind of comes in and says, no, you're not doing that differently. But usually those words don't come out of my mouth, but I guarantee I'm thinking it. I guarantee. And I'm usually like, okay. That's lovely. Praise God. But I'm just telling you that because, I just want you to know that I'm not speaking as a guy that's always changing stuff. It is really hard for me. I've also come to understand the importance of change, the importance of, as a leader, leading in change and doing things differently. I get that. And so a lot of times, my personality is not changing, but sometimes my leadership says I have to. And so I just want to set that up as the stage for what we're going to be talking about this morning, because we're going through this series, I Am MC3, looking at our core values as a church. And today we're talking about this idea of I am different. And over the last, if you haven't listened to them on what's our page? mc3church.org /thepoint. You can listen to all of them for I Am MC3. But kind of looking at who we are as a church, and if you haven't figured this out, because I don't change this part, but that's okay. I'm cool with that. Every fall, we kind of do here's who we are. It's kind of a vision talking about who we are as a church. This year is I Am MC3. Last year was I Heart My Church. A couple years ago was Go. And if you really want to be particular and obnoxious, you could listen to Go and then listen to I Am MC3 and be like, you taught that one already. And I'll say, yeah, because these are important things and because I don't like to change. So deal with it. But anyway, so this is kind of what we're looking at. And I want to talk to you about this idea of being different. And so here's the point that I want us all to walk away with and look at. And that is that I am different. So I am willing to change to reach people far from God. I am different. So I am willing to change to reach people far from God. Now, this is based on a core value that we have as a church, and again, I said this every week, but just to kind of let you know, if this is your first time here, if you're a guest, that our core values are like the guardrails. Our C3 process, community, congregation, caring, prime groups, worship experience, C3 opportunities. That is the vehicle. That is the way we are going to make disciples. That is our vision. That is our mission. Whatever you want to call it, pick your phrase, but that is our process for making disciples that Jesus called us to do. The core values are kind of our guardrails. They're the ones that are on the side of the road, kind of making sure we stay focused and bounce in the right direction. So these are kind of what guide us, and they affect and influence what we do. And so the core value that we're talking about this week is differently, is the name of the core value. And this is what it says on our website. Change. Sometimes it takes different methods to reach people far from God. So we value taking risks by looking at things differently. So sometimes it takes different methods to reach people far from God, so we value taking risks by looking at things differently. And that's what God has called us to do as a church. We are called to reach the world. And now we're not going to be able to get all the world into this room. But for the parts that we can influence and we can touch and make a difference in their lives, you know, that's what we're called to do, to reach people and draw them in. We're not here to reach other people that go to other churches, and we'll talk about that later. But we're here to reach people that maybe hate church. Maybe they've never been into a church. Maybe they've had a bad experience in church. And so our job is to reach people and draw them in. So that's what God has called us to do. And I don't make any apologies for that. You know, well, what about us inside? Well, hopefully if you're serving and doing what God has called you to do, then you are going to be growing and you are going to be encouraged. But it's really not about us. And we talked about that a few weeks back when we had popcorn. And how, you know, sitting here just eating popcorn, enjoying the show is not what church is about. Church is about living like Jesus and doing what Jesus has called us to do. So that's the point we're looking at. I am different, so I'm willing to change to reach people far from God. If you have a Bible, paper, or a YouVersion app, we're going to be in 1 Corinthians chapter 9. And is it just me, or is, like, without the air conditioners humming in here, it's deathly quiet? I feel like my words are more powerful today. Anyway, but it's different. Change. See? Winter, warm, summer, we want it to be cool. So anyway, in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, I'm going to read through this, and then we'll come back and look at it in pieces. But this is Paul writing, and if you were here for the Word, the sequel series, as well, it's available on mc3church.org. You can listen to that. But it was an overview of the New Testament in 4 weeks. And we talked about this part. 1 Corinthians was a letter. We talked about there were two different types of letters. There were letters by Paul and letters to others. And 1 Corinthians was a letter written by Paul. And in this particular letter, he was writing to the church in Corinth, and they had some issues. And so this letter's theme, again, if you remember, because you have it all memorized, all of those that we went through. But this letter's theme was correcting the church, because there were issues in the church in Corinth that Paul planted. He started this church and then went and was planting churches all over the area. And so he had to send a letter back to them, to the church in Corinth, because he had to correct some issues and some problems that were there. And so that's what the overall theme of this letter is in 1 Corinthians. And so this is what he says in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, beginning at verse 19. He says, though I am free and belong to no one, I have made myself a slave to everyone to win as many as possible. To the Jews, I became like a Jew to win the Jews. To those under the law, I became like one under the law, though I myself am not under the law, so as to win those under the law. To those not having the law, I became like one not having the law, though I am not free from God's law, but am under Christ's law, so as to win those not having the law. To the weak, I became weak to win the weak. I have become all things to all people, so that by all possible means I might save some. I do this for the sake of the gospel, that I may share in its blessings. So again, this is Paul writing to the church in Corinth. There were some issues going on in the context he's dealing with, and he's talking about change. And we're going to look at that here, but he's talking about this idea of being different. And so I want to do something here that I want you to understand. When you read the Bible, when you study Scripture, it's important that you understand it according to its original context. Why was it written? What was going on there? And get it for that point, and then say, okay, what can we learn? So there's kind of a step there. There's the observation interpretation step. Then there's a second step for application. And so it's saying, okay, this is what it says. Now, what does it mean to me? And I want you to know what I'm about to do here is I've already made that step. Okay, I've looked at what Paul is doing, and I'm just going to jump right to application because I want to talk about some of the issues here. So I want you to understand that as we talk about doing different, that we're looking at what did Paul do and how does it apply to us. So I'm kind of putting those two pieces together. And if that doesn't make any sense, that's okay. Just pay attention. But if you're like, if you look at the Bible and well, just that's what I'm saying. Okay, so there you go. I'm changing things a little bit. So doing different. What does it mean to be different? What does it mean to do things differently? And as you look at this passage in 1 Corinthians, Paul did some things differently. He was a guy that changed. And so the first thing I want you to see, and again, what we saw in Paul's story, but also for us, is that we are free. I want you to understand, this has to be the foundation. This is, I think, why Paul set it up this way, too. That we are free. If you have trusted Jesus as your Savior, if you are a Christ follower, if you have placed your faith in Him for eternity, if you find your hope in Jesus, if you are saved by the blood, if you are washed by the Lamb, I mean, pick your phrase, but if that's who you are free. There is nothing that you need to do, and I say this a billion times, and I'm not going to stop. There is nothing that you can do to make God love you more. And there's nothing that you can do to make God love you less. So you need to understand, as we begin talking about this idea of change, that Paul starts out, and this is what he says. He says, though I am free and belong to no one. He says, I am free. I am following Jesus. And because of that, I don't owe anybody anything. There's no rules. There's no rituals. There's no things I have to do to make God love me more. This isn't something I have to do or I'm not going to get into heaven. He says, I am free. And we need to understand that as followers of Jesus, we are free. And that doesn't mean, and of course he talks about this later, but it doesn't mean that we're free to do whatever we want, that we're free just to sin, just to, you know, there are some things, and we'll get to that in a moment, but the point he's saying here is that this isn't something he's doing out of duty. And I need you to get that. That there's nothing that we're going to be talking about this morning that has to do with duty. Like, oh, Jesus wants me to do it. I mean, Kendra shared about giving this morning. Like, if you're giving because you're doing it because Jesus wants you to do it, it'll make God happy, that is not why you should give. That is out of obligation. And Paul talks about that in one of the letters as well. He says, you know, don't do it out of duty or obligation. God loves a cheerful giver. Give because you want to. Give because it's part of something bigger. And we'll talk more about that today. So it all ties together. But the point is, he's saying, is that this isn't something that we do out of duty. And I need you to understand that. That as a follower of Jesus, you are free. You could say, you know what? I'm never going to change. That's your prerogative. That's fine. God is not going to love you less because you don't change. Now, as we'll see, that's going to affect some things in your life. But I want you to get that. This is the foundation that he is saying that we are free. He says, and the Greek word there is, it's a long word, so I'm not going to say it. But it basically means he's unbound. He's liberated. He is not bound to law. And you need to understand, he is a guy that was formerly Jewish. He was he still is Jewish, but formerly a legalist, one that followed the law. He was a Pharisee, did the letter of the law. And everything that a Pharisee did was based on the rules. And Paul is saying, I am following Jesus now. So just in case you were wondering, I am not doing this because I'm stuck in the law anymore, because I'm bound to some rule, to some duty, to some obligation. I am doing what I'm going to do, what he's about to share, because he's free. And there's a bigger picture there, too. So he says he's free. He doesn't belong to anyone. He is not forced into doing that. So when it comes to doing things differently, we need to understand that we are free. But. We must change. We are free. We can do whatever we want, but we must change. And so he goes on in the rest of verse 19 through 21. He says, though I'm free, I belong to no man, no person, to nobody. I have made myself a slave. And the word here is that. It's a slave, someone that has enslaved you, to bring under domination, to be controlled by. He says, I have made myself a slave to everyone. Freedom, slavery, they're polar opposites. And Paul says, I don't have to do this, but I have chosen to make myself a slave to everyone. Well, what's up with you, Paul? Why are you doing this? He says, to win as many as possible. And we'll see in a moment that he understands there's a bigger picture here. That this isn't about him. There's something big going on here. And so this idea is that he says, I am not bound. I am not forced to do this. but I am doing this so that I can win as many people as possible. So what is he doing? Well, he says, to the Jews, I became like a Jew to win the Jews. And so what does that mean? Like you went around and put on a turban or whatever Jewish turban, or like an ephod, I don't know. He says that I was, if I was around Jewish people, I used Jewish phrases because Jewish people understand Jewish phrases. I would do things and talk to the Jewish people in a language, and this is important, a language that they could understand. And so if I was around Jewish people, because I wanted Jewish people to come to Jesus, because I wanted to win them to Christ, because I wanted them to have a hope that is found in Jesus, I became like a Jew. He didn't go back to his rules, but he said, I became like one. So, I mean, it's the same kind of thing. And we went, and this translation, this language issue is going to come up each instance here. But, you know, I could go down to Oaxaca, which I did. And I could get out of the airport and on the car late at night going to the house that we were staying at. And while we're in the car, find out the first thing the next morning that you're prepared to speak to the kids, right? And nobody ever told me that I was needed to be prepared to speak to the kids. And I kind of weaseled my way through it. And then, you know, that was with the American, with Tom. Tom was like, oh, okay, I understand. Nobody's communicated that with you. That's cool. Then Victor's like, oh. So when I got down there the next morning, even though I thought I wasn't going to have to speak to all of them there, and when I say speak, they were expecting me to, like, teach them some profound truth. And so I totally wasn't prepared. But as things were, you know, okay, you're a pastor of MC3. They expect you to teach about something. What do you teach about? Let's talk about the C3 process. So I did. I told them why we're doing, you know, what caring is all about and why our team is serving down there. And they loved it. But here's the thing about it. Not that I was fabulous, but because I wasn't prepared for it. But I could have gone down there prepared with the most eloquent presentation, brought along my own projector for PowerPoint, and a generator to plug it in, and talk to them in ways where it would have, like, if I shared that with you, you guys would just be crying and on your knees, and you know, you would be selling. I mean, everything would change for you if I could present that way, right? And so I went down there and was going to share that. But I did it in English. It wouldn't have mattered because the Oaxacan people, most of them, few of them, many of them don't speak English. And so no matter how compelling, no matter how amazing what I had to say was, if I wasn't speaking in their language, it would have been totally irrelevant. And so that's kind of what Paul is talking about. If I didn't change the way I presented the truth, then it wouldn't have mattered. Now, there was a translator there, and I had fun fudging with the kids. You know, I would speak to them and then realize I could go only so far. My brain stopped working, and I have to go to English, and then could go back to Spanish for a while. Then my brain stops working, I have to go back to English. But the point was that you have to translate. You have to make it in a language that people understand. And that's what Paul was saying. When I was around Jewish people, I spoke in phrases that Jewish people would understand. I'd talk about the temple, and I would talk about the tabernacle, and I would talk about the law and Leviticus and sacrifices and all those things, because Jewish people got that. And so he says, when I was with Jewish people, I became like the Jews. Why did he do that? So they would understand the message, and so that he could win them to Jesus. He says, to those under the law, I became like one under the law. And this is a similar kind of thing. But you know, there were people that were not Jewish that were following the law and obeying the law. And he says, I became like that so that I could win those under the law. Now, he says, again, just to clarify, he says, though I myself am not under the law. He said, just in case, I am still free. I'm not going back to my old ways. I'm not changing back to a Pharisee. I'm not adding rules or legalism to following Jesus. He says, I'm doing this so that I can win them. And so I did this so that I could win those under the law. He goes on and says, to those not having the law, I became like one not having the law. And so he says the same kind of thing. For people that didn't, you know, there's no reason for me to talk. I mean, and frankly, for some of you guys, I mean, there is an Old Testament scholar that we always give him a hard time about in the presence of the room. And he could talk to you in your presence, right? He could talk to you about lots of Old Testament law things. And most of it, I probably would kind of understand. And I'm not saying, I just say that because I've gone to schooling to learn all the Old Testament laws, Hebrews, and all of my degrees and all that junk, which doesn't really matter in the scheme of life. However, what I'm saying is that the stuff that would be talked about, if you don't understand the Hebrew tradition and the Hebrew laws, it doesn't make sense to you. And so he says, there's no reason for me to talk about all of these laws to someone that doesn't get it, So instead, to those people, I talked to them in a way that they would understand. To the people that didn't have the law, I talked to them in a way that you know, there's no reason to talk about the Ten Commandments to someone that doesn't believe in the Ten Commandments. There's no reason to talk to them about stuff that happened in terms of, you know, what needed to happen on the year of Jubilee if they don't even know what the year of Jubilee was. The point was that for those not having the law, he didn't talk to them that way. He translated, he changed the way he spoke to those people. And again, now here's an interesting thing he adds in there. He says, though I am not free from God's law. He says, I'm not under the law. I'm not bound by rules. I'm not bound by legalism. But I am under Christ's law. And that was a fancy way of saying that, you know what? I need to let Jesus in me guide how I live. I need to be seeking. And so that's the caveat, I guess I will say here, is that when Paul says, you know, I'm free, I don't belong to anybody, I'm not under the law, there is a sense for all of us where, yes, we have to follow what, you know, if God is leading you to do something or it's in his word and Jesus says this is what you need to do, then do it. That's Christ's law. That's this idea of living for Jesus and the stuff we talk about all the time. But so he says, to those people not having the law, I became as one not having the law to win those not having the law. To the weak, I became weak, which is just another phrase. It wasn't, you know, that not that they were physically not strong, but these were spiritually weak people, young people, new believers in Jesus maybe, or people that didn't quite get it. He said, you know, I became weak to them. I didn't go in there and break out my PhD in theologicus and share with them all of these brilliant things when they're like, yeah, we can't even read. Like, you got to start basic. You don't go to your kids. I mean, our kids are homeschooled. And it's interesting watching where they find themselves in their education. There's how many kids? We have 4 kids. And they're each at different spots. And just yesterday I was talking to Kara about borrowing. Do you guys remember that phrase? I didn't remember that. I forgot. Like, I wiped it from my memory. But borrowing is that, I think that's in subtraction, right? Where you, like, cross the thing and make the 10 on the next column. Is that what it is? Some of you are like, I don't even remember that. See, I didn't either. But all that to say, why am I saying that? Because weak. Oh, because if we talk to Tommy, who's just learning to count and add about borrowing, he probably wouldn't get it. It wouldn't make any sense. We've got to start where he is. We've got to start at his level. We're not changing the importance of mathematics. We're not changing the laws of math. We're not saying 1 plus 2 equals 8. 1 plus 2 is still 3. Yes. And but we're making it and teaching it on a level that he understands. Kara is in, I don't know, she's probably like an advanced calculus. So I could teach her some kind of complicated trigonometry. Actually, no, she could probably teach me some kind of complicated trigonometry. But the point is that you take people where they are. Do you get it? And that's what he's saying here. With the weak people, the people didn't quite get it. I didn't start with them talking with them about Jesus, some super complicated, over-their-head understanding. I didn't get all theological on them. Is theology important? Absolutely. But you take it in certain ways. You take it in a way that people can understand. And this is one of my, honestly, this is one of my beliefs, whether you want to call it that, my philosophies of teaching. Like, I feel like you can teach anybody anything as long as you walk them with them to it. You can teach deep truths as long as you get them to that point. You can get people to float out in the deep ocean, but you need to walk with them through the shallows and get them out to it so you can teach them how to do it. You just don't just jump right in. So all that to say, that's what Paul was doing. So Paul did all of these things. These are just some illustrations. I became weak. I spoke to those under the law as if I was under the law. I talked to the Jews like I was a Jew. He said, I have become all things to all people so that by all possible means I might save some. See, Paul understood the importance of change. He understood how important it was to do things differently. Because if he kept doing things the same way for all the different people that he was talking to, the different people he was relating with, the people he was interacting with, then they wouldn't have gotten it. Some of them would, but many of them would not have. And so he made himself all things to all people so that by all possible means he might save some. He didn't, you know, he wasn't saying this is a magical formula. When you do this, all of a sudden, everybody's coming forward. There's altar calls and there's crying and there's, I don't know, whatever, there's an organ playing suddenly. He says, I've done this just so maybe by trying to talk to someone on their level in a language that they understand, somebody one or two people, I mean one or two, isn't that a big deal? One or two persons, peoples, eternity. He said, if that's what happens, then it's worth it. He understood the importance of change. Now, I need you to understand something that is going on here too, especially as we look at this in terms of how we as a church operate, how MC3 operates, how we as individuals hopefully operate. Paul says, I have become all things to all people. You need to understand that doesn't mean all at the same time. Okay? Paul could not be like one under the law and at the exact same time like one not under the law. It's not possible. They're conflicting, polar opposites, extremes. He was one or the other. And so he's saying that in whatever the circumstance required, he was that for those people. And it's important to understand that he wasn't saying that I'm everything, because if any of us, whether as a church with 100-some people, whether as individuals, if we try to do all things at all the times, we will die. You can't do it. We will burn ourselves out. We will kill ourselves. We will wear ourselves out trying to be something for everybody, and it's just not possible. So you need to understand that, because later we'll talk about how that works for MC3, and I don't want you to come up to me and say, well, how come we're not doing that? Because we have made some choices to do something here and now, and because of that, we're not doing that other thing. Well, Paul says to be all things to all people, but he didn't do it all at the same time. It was depending on the circumstances, depending on the audience, depending on the people that he was trying to reach. So as the situation arose, he became what was necessary at the time. So do you get that? Like Paul's saying, we are free, but it is important for us to change. As you guys, as we all go and interact and live our lives with people, we're going to have to respond to different people differently. Right? Do you get that? We have to change. And you guys, we do this all the time. We talk to people in different languages. Like, especially like if you are a professional, if you are in an industry, whether that industry is optometry or McDonald'sry, whatever, you know, or if you're a skilled worker or if you're a complex designer, there is language that you know within your industry. I was a manager at Dairy Queen, and I've said this before, not locally, but in Delaware, the top-selling Dairy Queen in the world, because it's all me. No, it was the top-selling Dairy Queen in the world, and I don't know if it still is, but literally it was like 6 years running. And I know some stuff about drive-through etiquette. I know some stuff about fry times. I know when a fish should float because it should be fried appropriately, and if it's not floating, that the time is wrong. I know all this random stuff, but if you've never worked fast food, I could start talking to you about just tons of stuff. But if you've never worked fast food, that wouldn't make any sense to you. So I might talk to you in different things, like, yeah, it's inappropriate that we have to wait too long. Okay, everybody gets waiting too long. Some of the other things, maybe not everybody understands. So we do that. We do that, you know, if you're with your family, right? When your little 3-year-old niece comes up to you and says, hi, Uncle Sean. You know, you go, hi, how are you? Good to see you. You know, you do that. Come and sit on my lap. How are you doing? You know, but if you're, you know, your 90-year-old aunt comes up to you and says, hi, Sean. Usually you're like, hi, Auntie. How are you? And generally you don't say, come and sit on my lap. Like, you just don't do that. You change based on the audience, based on the people that you're talking to. And so that's what Paul is saying, that look, he says, I have become all these things, and we need to change. We need, if we are going to reach people, if we are going to share the message of hope in Jesus, which is more important than anything else, then we're going to have to change to do it. So we must change. Why? Because we are a part of something bigger. We are a part of something bigger. This isn't about, oh, how many people did you have on Sunday? Or how many friends do you have? Or how many likes did you get on Facebook? How many followers do you have on Twitter? It's not about popularity. It's not about people liking us more. It's because we are a part of something bigger. And that's what Paul says. He says, look, I've become all things to all people, though by some possible means I might win some. He says, I do this for the sake of the gospel, that I may share in its blessings. He says, I am changing, and we'll talk about this in a little bit, but this is hard work. This isn't easy. It would be much easier for me to continue doing things the way I like to do them and not have to change. But I'm doing this for something bigger. I am doing this for the sake of the gospel. I am doing this because it is changing the eternities of people. And not just their eternities, but their nows too. When Jesus starts working in us, it starts to affect the way we live. It starts to affect the way we interact with others. It starts to affect our families. It starts to infect all of these areas of our lives. And he says, that's why I'm doing this. He says, I'm doing this because the gospel matters. Because it is bigger than our story. Paul isn't like, because I really want people to like me. He says, I'm doing this for the sake of the gospel. And he's also not doing this. Notice he doesn't say, I'm changing just for the sake of change. So while change is important, for those of you that might be change addicts, just changing for the sake of change isn't always a good reason either. Actually, it's rarely a good reason. Change because there's a need, because there's a reason to change. But I want you to understand that this idea, like there's some people are change addicts, and they just change just because they want to. And it's not wrong, but if that's the end goal, then maybe you've missed things, especially when it comes to how we do church, to how we to relate to other people. If we're just changing just because it's fun to change, then we're going to wear ourselves out because there's always something we can change to. There's always something new. There's always something different. There's always something better. And so we need to look back and say, why is it important to become all things? Why is it important to be different? Why is it important to change? Paul says, for the sake of the gospel. If we're not changing and the gospel is not being spread through us, then Paul says it's time to change. Paul doesn't say, you know, if the gospel is being spread, but people aren't very nice to you anymore, or you're not as popular in your school because you're standing out for Jesus, Paul doesn't say change for that reason. He says change for the sake of the gospel, that he may share in its blessings. And that's just the cool thing. Like, I hope, this chair is really low. I hope for the sake of, I'm messing with my chair. What was I saying? I hope you have an opportunity as an individual to be involved in changing someone's eternity. And I don't mean that as a forced obligation or, you know where you're going when you die. I just mean to be able to see, yes, you're a part of MC3 and God is using this church in so many crazy ways. And many of you are giving to that, maybe you're serving that, and you are part of it. So I do not want to diminish that. But there's just something to be able to say, like to see a changed life and to know that God used me in that person. To see a marriage that is together and thriving that a couple years ago wasn't, if it wasn't for God using you in that circumstance. To see someone that was headed down a path that was just personally destructive, and to know that you were involved in their lives and you were able to share Jesus and that he did the work. It's not about us, but that God, through Jesus, did the work in someone's life and turned their life around. Not that they're perfect, but turned them around. Man, that is the blessing that Paul is talking about. To be able to see that. To know that there are children that you are working with or your own children, and they have placed their faith in Jesus. They are Christ followers. That is sharing in its blessing. To sit opposite me, because I'm the pastor here, to sit opposite me in that horse trough, at the horse trough, to be able to baptize someone with me because you shared in them coming to Jesus. That is the sharing in the blessing. That is what Paul is talking about. That is the point. It's for the sake of the gospel. That is why he was willing to change. So, doing different. We need to understand that we're free, but we must change. You must change. I must change because we are a part of something bigger. And understand, like, this is not easy. It's simple, but it's not easy. It's hard work. It requires us to be proactive. I know that's a big catchphrase, but it requires, you know, you can't just sit back and drift through life and expect this to happen. If you see circumstances, you're going to have to say, okay, I'm going to do something. I'm going to act. I'm going to kind of respond. I'm going to change the way I speak and translate to a language that people understand. And that is not easy. It requires work. It requires time. But Paul understood that it was something bigger. It was the sake of the gospel. So, The point is, I am different. So I am willing to change to reach people far from God. And see, the situation is, by the way, if you're part of the MC3 family team that went to the Orange tour on Tuesday, I totally was going to do this before he did it on the stage. So I just want you to know that, okay? Just a little caveat there for those who were there. I had this planned ahead of time. Now, granted, I stole it from this guy 10 years earlier. But when he did it, I was going to do it before him. So, okay. But anyway, God has shared a message of hope. A message of redemption, a message of rescue from our sin. And that is what the entire Word of God, Genesis to Revelation, is about. It's about God sharing that story. And it's saying, I have something here. I have a timeless truth. I have something that is pure and wonderful and will change your forever and your now. And so the Word of God, the Bible, is God sharing that story with us. And so, it was throughout history, but there was a point where that message, God said, okay, you know, it's time to take this message and to make it into something that is flesh, that is real, that people can taste and feel. And so that message was poured into a man 2,000 years ago. And that's what the Bible says. In the beginning was the Word. Before time, there was the Word. The Word was with God. The Word was God. And then in John 1:14 it says, and then the Word became flesh and made His dwelling with us. He came and lived with us. Jesus came to this earth. He came taking that timeless message into a human form, into a Jewish form. And so that's the message. That's the story. And then, of course, that Jesus died for us, for every one of us. The Word became flesh. He Himself then later says He took our punishment in Him, so that we may live for righteousness, so that we may live differently because Jesus has changed us. So that's what the message was, that this timeless truth was poured into a human form, into a Jewish human form. And that says something. It says berit, the cup of the covenant. So it's fitting. See, I know what I'm doing. So, not that you would happen to know who the Hebrew scholar is in the room at this point. But anyway, so the Word became flesh, and that's what this message was poured into that human form. And see, it is our job now is that we still have this timeless truth. The message, understand, God's message, this clear, pure water, didn't change. It just took a different form. It was translated into a different language. It changed into how it was packaged, but the message itself stayed the same. And I know that's a little contradictory, but it'll make sense. So the message is the same, but the way it was presented was in a form of a Jewish person, a Jewish man in Jesus. And then our job today is to take this message, because that's what Paul says, you know, we've got this message, we've got the truth, we have the truth of the gospel, and our job is to communicate it to all people, so that by all possible means we might win some. And so it's taking that message and packaging it in a way that people understand. It's translating, it's changing, not the message, but how we present it so that people will get it. And so we have our MC3 family team here at MC3 that takes this message and they package it in a way, message is still the same, in a way that is understandable to children. And if you're like, I'm in fifth grade and I don't use a sippy cup, okay, fine. But we package it in a way that makes sense for kids. And that's what we do as a church. And that's what we do as hopefully, you know, if you're part of our MC3 family team, if you serve an Ignition or an ATU, you know, we're making things in a way that kids get. You're not going to talk with kids about, you know, substitutionary atonement, at least not in a very deep, complicated way. The hypostatic union, you're probably not going to use that phrase, but you might say, yeah, God came to earth, because that's what it means. Because you're going to package it in a way that kids will get it. And you're going to speak their language. You're going to talk in terms that they understand. We're doing Hosea next month. And I said last week, read Hosea. And if you didn't read it, I'm just telling you, you're going to be like, how in the world are they going to teach this to everybody, but also the kids? Well, because we're going to package it in a way that makes sense. And we're probably not going to talk about what it's like when you marry a prostitute. Spoiler. We're probably not going to talk to kids about that. But we might talk about what does it mean when someone who is your friend turns their back on you? Taking the truth and packaging it in a way that kids understand. So that's our job. Now, the message is the same, but our MC3 student team is starting this week with our first student prime, and Justin talked about that this morning. You know, we hope to have multiple primes. I know that was one of the questions last week. Is it only going to be Thursday night? So we hope to eventually have a prime every night for students that we offer a prime for adults. But we'll take this message, we'll take the timeless truth, and we're going to communicate it in a way that is relevant to students. To students that are in middle school and high school. And see, the truth is the same, but it's going to mean some different things. Because these guys are just learning how to, like, understand why people are mean sometimes. Or why they took my shoe when they were supposed to. Or why did my brother keep hitting me? But they're dealing with a little bit different things now. Like, why do I believe what I believe? Why do I go to church? Like, my parents always made me. Do I believe it? Do I get it? What is the deal with this sex stuff? Why do I feel this way? Because before, I didn't get it. There was cooties and all that. And now it's a whole different thing. And so we're communicating things in a way to say, okay, we want to take this message and package it in a way that makes sense to students. And then, of course, we take the same message and we want to present it in a way that makes sense to adults. And this represents adults, okay? Because it does. And so we're going to take the truth, and the truth doesn't change, but we're going to say things differently. And there's things that I would say to you in here as adults that I would not say to children. There are some things that I can say directly that if I said directly to kids, I might scare them. As a matter of fact, we were going through the Word the Sequel series. My elders pointed this out to me the next week. The first week I talked about it, I said, you know, just knowing the Bible doesn't keep you out of hell. It's not about a relationship. And the way I phrased it was something like, if you know about Jesus, you're going to hell. And there were apparently some scared kids in the room. Like, I do know about Jesus. You know, so I there were kids there, and I messed up how I said that. But the point was that it's about a heart change, not just knowledge. But we're going to package it differently for adults, and we're going to make it in a way that adults get it. As adults, you are dealing with things like marriage and raising children and dealing with sickness and health in a way that kids and teenagers aren't. We're dealing with different things. We're dealing with jobs and losing our jobs. And, you know, when I was fired from my paper route, I really didn't care. It meant I didn't have to get up early. It wasn't a life-changing, altering experience. You get fired from your job as an adult and you've got children and a family counting on you, it's a whole different thing. So we take this timeless truth. The message doesn't change, but we change how we present it for different people. Now, here's the deal, right? As a church, many churches take the timeless truth, and this is not wrong, but they present it in a way that tends to be more traditional, in a way that tends to be, you know, in a way that traditional, perhaps, and I don't want to make this statement as directly as it's going to sound, so don't quote me on it or tweet it or something, but we make it in perhaps a way that's older. It's for a previous generation sometimes, not always. And there's nothing wrong with that, because you know what? Old people need Jesus. Traditional people need Jesus. And so the church has often done this. And the unfortunate part in general, and I'm totally making stereotypical statements, steal, okay? Typically, the American church does a lot of this. We love taking this message and packaging it in a way that sounds very like Southern gospel music. We like, and there's nothing wrong with Southern gospel music, kind of. That's preference. But we package it in a way that looks like suits and ties. Is there anything wrong with suits and ties? No. We package it in a way that is involving, you know, evening services. Is there anything wrong with evening services? No. There's nothing wrong. Please understand what I'm saying. But we package it in a way that works great if you're a traditional person. If you're a person that grew up perhaps going to church. Or if you're a person that perhaps is a little bit older and prefers some of the older style things. The message is true. The message is accurate. The message has not changed. But it's packaged in a more traditional way. The problem is, and I don't mean to say problem, but the issue is this group of people is getting much and much smaller. And I don't mean because they're getting old and stooped over. But they're getting, the percentage-wise, is getting much smaller. Because the world is getting is growing of people that have nothing to do with Jesus and are looking rather broken and battered and used up. And so we can keep packaging this message in a traditional cup and say, you know, why don't you come and fit into our traditional mold? And they're like, I don't even know what that cup is. I don't know what that package is. I don't get it. It doesn't make any sense to me. And so the world, I mean, at least in the United States, you know, we're not talking globally, but at least around here in Mifflin County even, there's a lot of broken. And it's not perfect. It's not fancy. And broken, you know, you show up at a tea party with something like this and you're going to get looked at kind of funny. But at MC3, what we're trying to do, our goal is to fill this cup with the timeless truth. The message hasn't changed. The message is still the same. But we are changing and doing things differently to reach a broken and hurting world. And I don't, to be honest, I guess if this has influenced you, then eventually you become a whole styrofoam cup. I don't know. I mean, we don't want to turn you into this. Certainly don't want to turn you into this. And you can't turn into this, just in case you're wondering, you will never be Jesus. But the idea is to take the message and say, we're willing to change to reach people. And so that's what we eventually have. We've got this process, this C3 process, that is MC3. That is Mifflin County Community Church. We pour the message into it. And for us right now, it looks like, there's three C's here, did you ever notice that? It looks like community and prime groups. And so we have prime groups that meet throughout the week. We want everybody to be a part of it because that's how we're trying to develop, to communicate this message in a way that's relational. The community is important. We have congregation. We have the worship experience because right now that's how we feel it's important for us to gather together and learn and worship together because community is biblical. Congregation is biblical. And then caring. It's biblical. The early church sold their possessions. They gave to those people as they had need. So we have C3 opportunities. We have a way for you through prime groups, church-wide, whatever, to be able to help care for other people. But understand, community, congregation, and caring are biblical. Prime groups is not. This is not. And C3 opportunities are not. Now, they're not anti-biblical. But you need to understand that we may look in a couple of years and say, you know what? We know we need to be in relationships with one another. But we've been praying and seeking God and saying, you know what? I don't think prime groups is the way to do it anymore. Does that mean that there's something wrong with prime groups or they're sinful or of the devil? No. But it means that we understand that the core truths don't change. But the package may. We might not be meeting here in a couple of years. I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there. It might look totally different. And granted, the worship experience hopefully looks different from week to week. And we're making some changes to prime groups, which you'll find out next week if you're a leader. We've been hinting at them somewhat. But starting in November, there's going to be some different things that are going to be happening within prime groups. Is it because what we were doing before wasn't biblical or because it was anti-God? Or no, just we saw some needs and we wanted to change. How can we fix them? And one of the things we're doing is, as you discovered this past week in your prime group, is having an ATU PAC event, an ATU PACtivity, if you will, where you, as a prime group, do something with your family because we think that's important. So we've changed. And so that's the issue, is that when it comes to being different, we have to be willing to change to reach people far from God. We like to say that MC3 is like nothing you'd expect. And that's because I think many people are used to this. And sometimes, not always, sometimes this package tends to be judgmental. Sometimes this does too. Whoa, that's full. and sometimes this, you know, frankly, judgmentalism goes through. But you know what? Sometimes people have been burned by this a little bit. And so we want to do this. And you know, there's going to be a point, I hate to say it, people are going to be burned by this. And maybe by this. And what's going to happen, as we talked about last week, a new generation is going to rise up and say, you know what, we want to do things differently. And our job, and this ties totally into what we were talking about last week, our job is to empower them and say, okay, you see it differently. Okay, let's go. Otherwise, we will just become irrelevant and stuck if we are not willing to change. So we need to be willing to change. That's why we're doing it. For the sake of of the gospel. I hope this makes sense. I hope that you get, this is why MC3 is different. Are we different just to be different? No. Are we different so that a lot of people will come in here? No. Are we different so that people who do not feel comfortable for whatever reason, or have had baggage, or don't even get the church thing, so there'll be an environment where they kind of will be able to translate what they understand about their broken world into a message that makes sense? That's why we're doing it. And that's why we work at it. This is not easy. And I don't say that because I'm whining. I'm just saying it's not. Traditional church is easier. And one of the things I've talked with people actually at the Orange Tour on whatever day that was, Tuesday, I ran into a former student of mine when I was an intern in Delaware. So that was 20-some years ago. And he is now a youth pastor at a church plant. But he's a volunteer church plant, or a volunteer youth pastor, because this church plant of, what did they say, I think it's 1,100 people, over 1,000 people, can't afford to hire a second staff person. And that's typical. And I'm just saying here, wow, how do we afford what we're doing? I don't know. My point is that God is working, God is doing something, and so it's not about our credit, it's not about how awesome we are. It's not to say that we get better givers. It's because we want to do something to reach people that are from outside the church and do it in a way that matters to them. That is why we are changing. We're not doing it just to change. Please get that, because like I said from the beginning, I don't want to change. I want to keep things the same. I sometimes don't like those what-if questions that come up at elders' meetings. And to be honest, guys, elders, sometimes I throw them out there and I don't want to answer those questions, but I, as a leader, we need to keep looking into change and how we can change. So I want to talk about change just real quick. Do you guys remember the old Beatles song? Ch-ch-change, yes. Was that Beatles? Anybody remember Beatles? They were like a group from somewhere over the other side of the ocean. England, I think. Anybody? No? Wasn't the Beatles? No, definitely was not the Beatles. That's why I wasn't talking about them. You guys need to get with it, okay? The Beatles. Man, come on, we've moved on. That was from like 1912. Or 60, whatever. Way before my time. Anyway, changes. So whoever sang the song about changes, now you'll hear it and you'll know. Now you want to think about MC3. David Bowie? Google. All right. Okay, changes. So some things about change you need to understand. First of all, and this should have been clear at this point, but just to make sure, the message doesn't change. The method does. The message doesn't change. The method does. What we are saying does not change. We are still talking about giving your life to following Jesus, because He is the only one that can remove your sins and offer you hope of eternity, and that you are forever in your sin without Jesus. That is the message. But how we package that might be differently, might be done differently. It might look different. It might sound different. You might hear, and you probably, if you've been here for any time, and wait till we hit Hosea, you might hear a secular song. Why? Because if Katy Perry can sing a song about God's unconditional love in a way that we get, then let's take it. That's what we did a few months ago. If we want to talk about prayer and sing about prayer or about heroes, I mean, like, do you get it? There's a lot of stuff that we're going to do for the sake of the gospel. We haven't changed the message, but we've changed how we present it. And, you know, right now you're in rows. Sometimes you come in here and the chairs aren't in rows. Because we want to do, and I love the fact that we're not bolted down, that we can do what we need to do. If we're going to do something different, we can move things around to communicate the message. So the message doesn't change. The method does. It's how we package it. The message stays the same. The method changes. The second thing we need to understand, now we're going to get a little more personal, and we're talking about not just as a church, but individually. And that is that growth requires change. Growth requires change. If you look at a plant, as it's growing, what happens? It's changing. It's producing buds. It's adding new limbs or whatever it might be. If it's a fruiting tree, it's producing fruit. And it's changing. It's growing. It's getting bigger. As human beings, we are changing as we grow. You look differently now than you did when you were six. You look differently now than you did when you were 25. And you look different. You know, we're going to, because we're growing and we're keeping changing. We keep changing because change and growth are together. Let me say this. If you're not changing, you're not growing. Because a plant that isn't changing, and I had one up in my office for a long time, finally got rid of it on the move from the front back part of the building to the back part of the building there, and it was dead. And it had been dead for like 2 years. Because when I moved to MC3, we put it upstairs. I think someone watered it like once in the first couple weeks. And then it didn't get any water. And so it stayed the same. And when you touched it, finally all the leaves turned brown and fell off. But if it wasn't changing, it wasn't growing. And if it's not growing, it's dead. So get that. That individually, if you are not changing, you are not growing. And if you are not growing, you are dead. And I know that's kind of harsh and kind of tough, but I want you to understand that if we're growing to be more like Jesus, it's going to require changing things. If you say, I'm a fully devoted follower of Jesus, or I'm more like Jesus today, or I'm being sanctified, or whatever you want to use as a phrase, and your life looks the exact same way it did a year ago, you're just saying nice phrases, but you're not growing. Your decisions will look differently if you're growing. The people, the way you interact with them or who you interact with, frankly, would change. The stuff you listen to, the stuff you watch, the stuff you talk about, all of that should be changing if you are growing. If it's not changing, you're not growing. If you're not growing, you're dead. Get that. So we need to understand that growth requires change. We have to be changing. And we'll say this in a second, but understand that. That you have to be changing. If you're not changing, you're growing. Again, we're not changing for the sake of change. You're not saying, oh, this week I wore a red shirt or a black shirt or whatever color shirt I'm wearing now. It's not the issue of saying, oh, I've changed that, therefore I'm growing. But if you're not changing, you're not growing. Does that make sense? You can make changes and never grow. But you can't grow without making changes. I think that was profound. It almost sounded like it. And I'm seriously, I'm not like trying to be obnoxious or arrogant. I was like, oh, that sounds kind of cool. I should write that down. But growth requires change. So that's the second thing we need to understand about changes. The message doesn't change, the method does. And growth requires change. It means that we're going to have to change if we're going to grow. And if that means growing because more people are coming in that have never been into church, so be it. If that means we are growing individually in our relationship with Jesus and people are changing the way they live, then we're going to change for the sake of that. That's the point. The third thing we need to understand, this is a really hard one, and that is that change requires risk. Change requires risk. There's two kinds of risks that I have here. They're not on the screen, but you can think about them or write them down. The first risk is we need to risk being uncomfortable. Because change is uncomfortable. Sometimes. But I will say that if you're changing because you like to change, for the sake of change, then that's fine. You can say, oh, I like change. I'm cool with that. But if you have to change something you don't want to change, then that's uncomfortable. And I think we need to understand that if we're going to be growing as individuals, and if we're going to be reaching the people that God has called us to reach, then we're going to have to be uncomfortable sometimes. It means we're going to have to do things that maybe aren't the way you're used to. You know, what are the words of a dying church? We've never done it that way before. 7 words. We've never done it that way before. And I don't think we say that much around here because we don't really have a that way. But 5, 10 years down the road, we will have a that way. That way. And so we're going to have to risk. We're going to have to say, you know what? I might not prefer it this way, but I am willing to suck it up for the sake of reaching people. You might say, well, I would prefer not to act like a Jewish person because I am free from the law. And Paul says, I'm sucking it up for the sake of reaching them because I might win somebody because of it. And so change means we're going to have to risk being uncomfortable. We can't get stuck on our preferences or our desires if we're going to change to reach more people. Remember, this isn't about you. We're not changing for the sake of you. I'm not changing for the sake of me. We're changing for the sake of the gospel, a bigger story, a bigger picture. And so it's going to mean sometimes that we're going to do things that might not be your preference. One of the things, I don't know how we work it in here, but if you're younger than like 20, then, you know, like dubstep, techno is definitely trending, definitely the edge of music going. Our music sounds a little less like that. How do we change it? I have no idea. But somebody's like, well, that's not appropriate for worship. If it reaches people and it doesn't change the message, then it is appropriate for worship. It might mean that if we're living in an area where people listen to country music, we might use country music in some of our stuff. And we have to suck it up every time we hear a country music song and say, good, good, because that's we're reaching the culture we're in. Okay. But you get it? I mean, it might mean just doing things that we're not used to, that we're not comfortable with. And if we're doing something that's wrong, if we've changed the message, then we've got a problem. Please understand that. But changing the package might mean that it's not our preference, but we're doing it for the sake of reaching people. And we need to keep changing. We're going to have to risk being uncomfortable because there's we've aged. We're 3 years older than we were. Our 3-year anniversary is this week. The 16th is our official 3 years of launch for MC3. And we have to keep changing. I mean, we started ATU 2.5 years ago, and it looks every year it's changed. We did Ignition. It's totally changed. Like, we are changing not for the sake of change, but for the sake of reaching people. And so we're doing this because it's important. The second risk, and this is just, I'll be straight up with you guys, change requires risk, and we need to risk failing. Doing things differently, if we're willing to risk to do things differently, it means we're going to fail at times. We've had failures. We've done things that we're like, that was awful. And we've also done things that we hadn't planned to do that way, and they turned out awesome. You know, and just this idea of changing is that we need to risk failing. I will tell you this, though, right? If we are not willing to risk and fail, we've already failed. Because if we're not willing to say, okay, how can we package this in a way that people will get it? Well, you know, it's a lot easier not to do that. It's a lot easier to stay with what we're comfortable with. But if we're risking, we might be like, oh, wow, look at that. We tried that and there was a hole in the bottom of the cup. That didn't work. But if we don't do that, we're not gonna reach people. We've already failed. We need to do this for the sake of the gospel. I was just going to say one interesting little tidbit. I've served in paid church ministry for almost 20 years now. And I will say this, not because I'm the lead pastor of MC3, but I don't think there's anything that we do at MC3 just because. And I say that just to kind of encourage you, you know, if you're like, oh, why don't we do it that way? That's stupid. And I have a better idea. For the most part, honestly, we try to think through everything that we do and why we do it so that we're able to reach people. And so it might not be what you like. And sometimes those things fail. And we will admit some things have failed. Some things worked. Some things are just kind of eh. But the point is we're trying to reach people. And so we need to change to do it. So the point, I am different. So I am willing to change to reach people far from God. That not only needs to be who we are as a church, as MC3, but as individuals. Are you willing to change to reach people far from God? That's what we've been called to do. That's what Paul did. And he did it all for the sake of the gospel. Let's pray. Jesus, thank you so much for your example and that you yourself were change embodied. The Word became flesh. You translated the holy supernatural God who was outside of time and translated into a human being, into a way that we could understand, a way that we can get it. I thank you for that example, God, and I pray that you would help us as individuals to be willing to change to reach people, that we would be willing to take your timeless truth, your message that doesn't change, and put it in a way that people will understand it, that people will get it. And God, for some of us, that might mean we need to change our attitude. We need to change our actions. Because the package that we're presenting right now is ugly, and people don't want the Jesus that's in us. And so I pray that you would help us to be willing to risk, to be willing to think differently so that we can reach people far from you. And as a church, God, give us wisdom to do what we need to do to keep your message relevant, to keep your message that doesn't change and put it in a way that people will get it so that more and more and more and more people will come to know Jesus as their Savior, will come to understand that they need to follow him, that they need to follow you. And so that by all this, we might possibly win some to Jesus. It's in his name we pray. Amen.